Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're looking at Brexit. Our panel discusses the likelihood of a Brexit deal given the many stumbling blocks. They'll survey the domestic political landscape in the United Kingdom for clues as to whether any deal that is agreed might get through Parliament, and they'll consider the prospects for new global deals post-Brexit, given prevailing trade uncertainty around the world. We start with Dean Turner, economist in the UBS Wealth Management CIO in London. Let's get Dean a temperature take. Sometimes it seems there's still more in the to-be-decided tray rather than the done tray, and much that remains seems to be more political in character, like the Irish border question. How would you sum up where we're at, Dean, whether looking at the bigger picture or on that specific vexing border question?
My sense is that given that this is an extremely political matter, that this one is going to run down to the wire. So I don't expect that we're actually going to see any progress anytime soon. That said, you know, this shouldn't be an insurmountable problem. I'm sure the EU and the UK have it within them to find a form of words that is acceptable to both parties. But it's probably just still a little bit too early in the process for that to happen right now.
And Dean, to that point then, and I know you wrote in your piece, Building Bridges, recently about the fact that we'll probably almost require some blurring around some of these key constraints at this stage just to keep momentum moving forwards. Is this a kind of a rare example, I suppose, where, you know, a bit of blurring, a bit of indecision in some ways is actually what we need to keep progress coming?
Well, I think in the long and storied history of all EU negotiations that have taken place throughout the years, there's always going to be an element of compromise or, for want of a better term, fudge, especially when it comes to some of the political considerations here. I think what we're seeing on this occasion is going to be no different. Now, I don't think we should lose sight of the fact that neither party in this negotiation would like to see no deal. It's not in either side's economic interests, and therefore I think that that's going to be the driving force here. A compromise can be found, and therefore it probably will be found. But as with all negotiations, these things just have to run down to the wire.
Geoffrey Yu is ultra high net worth investment strategist for UBS Wealth Management. Geoff, as we've already been hearing, it's pretty hard to get a sense of what might be possible in the longer term, given the sheer breadth and depth of uncertainty that's out there. What do we think might be possible anytime soon?
Defined soon, because in the trade deal negotiations, they are normally the unit is a matter of years in terms of, you know, how long it actually takes to negotiate one. So any can be completed, you know, within, let's just say, a low single digit years. I think that can be, you know, construed as soon by trade deal standards. But ultimately, you know, all this is just hypothetical right now. It's all academic. You know, we need to see what the customs arrangement between the UK and the EU is. Will there be ready made ones on departure? They're very, very unlikely. I don't think that's being expected by anyone anytime soon. But over time, as soon as, you know, we get some degree of certainty over what the customs relationship, over the capacity for the UK to negotiate trade deals, you know, then we can actually go from there. So it's a learning process.
Well, let's talk. We've already talked about the political considerations here. What about the domestic issues, Dean? Because, of course, it remains to be seen whether whatever deal is agreed can get through any potential Commons vote. And I know you've described it as a fool's game trying to predict, so I won't ask you to do that explicitly. But what should people be mindful of when it comes to talking about the domestic political considerations?
Yeah, I think that's the more important point here to look out for over the next couple of months. It's, you know, a withdrawal agreement can be negotiated, but it's whether that agreement can get through in the UK Parliament. Now, the withdrawal agreement will have to be ratified by UK Parliament in order for it to become law. The problem the Prime Minister has is that following the snap general election in 2017, she no longer has a majority, and therefore she is reliant on the DUP, which is a Northern Irish party, in order to get any deal through. Another consideration that the Prime Minister has is that, you know, there are a number of MPs within her own party. That number has been put as high as 80. My guess is that it's significantly lower than that. But nonetheless, there are enough MPs within the party that would balk at any further compromise that the PM may make within the withdrawal agreement. And unless she can get those MPs on side, there's every chance that the vote to ratify the withdrawal agreement could be lost. And that potentially puts us into uncharted territory.
What about the broader economic situation for the United Kingdom? Things don't look too bad, I suppose, in terms of the fundamentals. Maybe the market's not too spooked thus far. Dean Turner, how would you sum it up?
The bigger picture for the UK economy is that there clearly has been a slowdown in the pace of growth since the referendum result. And if I look at the data that explains that slowdown, part of it being down to the consumer, which was affected by the inflation shock that came through after sterling collapse following the referendum result. But what we're increasingly seeing now is it's actually business investment that's acting as a drag on the economy. Now, that said, as I have to say, you have to put everything into context, it still looks like the economy is growing at around 1.5 to 1.75% per annum. Within the grand scheme of things, that's still pretty decent, especially if we consider that trend growth in the UK is probably estimated to be around 1.5%. So you've got an economy that's growing at or slightly above trend. The question is, you know, can that continue? Now, my view is that if we do get to the situation where the UK-EU agree a withdrawal deal and that deal is ratified by the UK Parliament, then as the UK moves on to the transition arrangement for a couple of years, it's quite likely that some of that weakness we've seen, especially with regards to business investment, could actually come back. So it's probably quite likely that we will see a bit of a bounce to growth next year just on that outcome alone. And you also mentioned the budget, and I think it is quite important to recognise that this week's budget was a bit of a surprise. It was a surprise in terms of the size of the fiscal easing announced by the Chancellor. Now, we can all debate whether he's opted for the right kind of tax and spend mix, but just taking rough numbers, we're looking at a loosening of fiscal policy next year that amounts to somewhere around 0.3% of GDP. So that's pretty meaningful. So assuming that the UK moved on to a transition arrangement, then the outlook for growth should probably improve a little.
Daniel Trum works in the currency strategy team in the CIO at UBS Wealth Management. Daniel, give us an update on the market response thus far. In some ways, the market seemed to have taken Brexit relatively well and remained fairly sanguine. Is that fair, Daniel Trim, in your view?
Well, it depends on what you consider taking it well. Looking at the currency, the sterling, it's been very volatile recently. And you also see that reflected in what the market is pricing in terms of risks of further volatility for the upcoming months. If we look at the cost of insurance against further up and down moves in the currency, sterling has become very expensive compared to other currencies. So in other words, the market is already expecting a lot of turbulences upcoming. And this is especially true for the period up until around this ominous Brexit deadline end of March, so roughly 5 to 6 months from now.
Daniel Trum. Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll ask some of our regular Monocle voices for their take on progress or lack of it so far. Now, Sebastian Borger, London correspondent for Der Tagesspiegel, and the author and journalist Terry Stiassny join me here at Midori House in London to share a view from some Monocle regulars, and indeed their wider circle, be that in the Westminster Village, in Brussels, in Berlin. Let's start with you, Terry Stiassny. We're told by some that the bulk of the kind of heavy lifting is done, and actually there's only a couple of big stumbling blocks that we know about that remain. Do you buy that story?
I think it's interesting that as we speak, it does seem a little bit suspiciously quiet. We had the big flurry of activity after the Salzburg summit that didn't go so well. We've heard briefings from people around the Prime Minister saying that, you know, a deal is 95% done. But the trouble is the part of it that isn't done. You know, as Theresa May has always said, you know, nothing is agreed until everything is agreed. And that's been the refrain that we've heard from all around Europe. Some of the things that aren't agreed are still massively important, such as the Irish border question, for instance, and the question of, which is related to that, of whether Britain will be in any kind of customs union or bigger economic arrangement. So those are still huge sticking points. And I expect over the next few weeks, you know, it's going to come to some sort of a crunch as to whether an agreement can be reached in time for all the deadlines that are coming up.
What have we learned about the United Kingdom, I wonder, Terry Stiassny, going forward? Are we any closer to understanding what, you know, UK PLC looks like in terms of its functionality in the future?
I think You were asking earlier whether we can fudge certain issues in the interests of getting a deal. I think one of the problems with that is there has to be a deal that's set out clearly in black and white, in cold, hard print. And once you have that, people are going to go through it finally and say, what does it mean for trade? What does it mean for Northern Ireland? So once it comes down to it, if there is any sort of an agreement, you're not going to be able to get away with that fudge. As regards the British economy, I think, again, we're getting really conflicting signals about that. Even between this week, the Chancellor, Philip Hammond, and the Prime Minister. So we heard the Chancellor say in interviews that, well, this budget is on the basis of there being a deal. Were there problems with Brexit, then they might have to somehow come back again and think about it again. That was sort of slammed down from Number 10, saying, you know, no, this is how it's going to be. There are certain benefits that we can promise economically in terms of tax cuts and so on and more public spending for a post-Brexit future. The trouble is that once you look in the fine print of that deal, the Office for Budget Responsibility, that actually has to say whether these sums are going to work, points out that there's a big unknown out there, which is Brexit, which is what our trading arrangements are going to be like, which is what our relationship is going to be with the rest of the world. And, you know, we can't say it too often, but time is running out to be able to put any of this into practice.
And Sebastian, is that the view when you speak to, I don't know, colleagues, friends in Berlin, for example, or in Brussels or anywhere else that isn't within the borders of the UK? Are people sanguine about what the future will look like?
First of all, when you talk about Berlin, Brexit is pretty low on the agenda. That's one thing to note. You know, we've just had the Chancellor, our Chancellor, Angela Merkel, saying that she won't be the leader of her Conservatives anymore. That means that, in my view, that she won't be the Chancellor of Germany by the end of next year anymore. So we've got big change coming up in our country. And the functioning of the European Union is threatened much more by Italy than by Brexit, I would have thought. Brexit is terrible for the German economy, there's no doubt about it. Everyone is saying that, and I think people are realizing that. But on the other hand, they know that it's going to be catastrophic for Britain. And anyone who is still trying to tell people that it's all going to be hunky-dory and Britain will have great trade deals with Fiji and Samoa is just really lying to people.
What else concerns you? Terry Stiassny, is it all about the Irish border question still?
I struggle to see what the shape of any deal is. I'm, you know, also totally taken board Sebastian's point about, you know, the absolute horrors that might await us if there is no deal. You know, planes not flying, boats not travelling, all of that we can expect. The interesting thing, I suppose, in the next few weeks is the parliamentary maths of it. What is there an agreement that Theresa May can get through that keeps Leavers and Remainers happy on her own side, that keeps the DUP, the Northern Irish Party, happy? Can she divide the Labour Party that's also split?
Monocle regulars Terry Stiassny and Sebastian Borger. On the domestic politics, Dean Turner, if we can come back to you, it's important for anyone watching markets, sterling, Great Britain going forwards, that they keep an eye on the Prime Minister status, on the sort of party machinations. What do you say, Dean Turner, when clients ask about that?
Well, in terms of the outlook for the Prime Minister, I think any talk of a leadership challenge emerging before Brexit, is the chances of that are quite low. The reason for that is that I don't believe that many in the Conservative Party will want the uncertainty of a drawn-out leadership process, and these things can typically take a couple of months, especially given that the deadline for Brexit is approaching. So I would argue that she probably looks a little bit safer than perhaps is commonly perceived. When we're looking towards the long term, I think it's quite clearly becoming apparent that it's very unlikely that Mrs. May will be leading the Conservative Party into the next election. That doesn't mean to say she has to go within the next 6 months or so, but it's quite likely that Mrs. May will not be around to see the conclusion of the Brexit negotiations, which we must remember are going to go on for quite a few years yet.
Finally on the programme, from an investor viewpoint, what is the best advice? Dean Turner in his House View note talks about keeping sterling exposure to a minimum being the most sage strategy, at least for the time being. Daniel Twim, he's right in that, I presume.
Yes, I would. I think it's the best way to choose is to have as much in insurance, so to speak, as possible. So really be prepared for these large moves, as I've explained before. Our forecast is currently that we should see sterling against US dollar at 1.36 in 12 months, but the road to get there, even in a scenario where they avoid the cliff edge Brexit, could be quite bumpy because, as we have seen in recent weeks, every time negative news get out, the currency is one of the first assets to be hit. So in that sense, it's really advisable to have a large enough cushion on either side. But eventually also consider that if we can avoid the cliff edge Brexit, then sterling should already be at a quite cheap level and for the long term could be at some point an interesting currency to buy.
And Daniel Trim, perhaps a final takeaway on the wider issue of global trade uncertainty.
Got a lot of issues out there that can influence currencies like euro and sterling, which tend to be more cyclical, so more demanded when things are going well globally. They can be affected a lot by these swings in risk sentiment. And this is something that goes so even beyond Brexit. So even if we can find a good deal on Brexit, there can still be setbacks because, for instance, you see markets suddenly in a complete safe haven mode where they are just looking for US dollar, maybe a bit of yen and Swiss franc, and all these undervalued currencies, which tend to be more risky, like euro and sterling, would then be shunned, even though actually the long-term outlook may not be that unfavorable.
And that's Daniel Trim bringing us to the end of this 213th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via your preferred podcast platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.